It was, I'm sorry to say, however, only another instance of his cunning, for within half an hour I heard of him again. This time he'd broken out through the window of his room and was running down the avenue. I called to the attendants to follow me, and ran after him, for I feared he was intent on some mischief. My fear was justified when I saw the same cart which had passed before coming down the road, having on it some great wooden boxes. The men were wiping their foreheads and were flushed in the face as if with violent exercise. Before I could get up to him, the patient rushed at them, and pulling one of them off the cart, began to knock his head against the ground. If I hadn't seized him just at the moment, I believe he would have killed the man there and then. The other fellow jumped down and struck him over the head with the butt end of his heavy whip. It was a terrible blow, but he didn't seem to mind it, but seized him also and struggled with the three of us, pulling us to and fro as if we were kittens. You know I am no lightweight, and the others were both burly men. At first he was silent in his fighting, but as we began to master him and the attendants were putting a straight waistcoat on him, he began to shout, "I'll frustrate them. They shan't rob me. They shan't murder me by inches. I'll fight for my lord and master," and all sorts of similar incoherent ravings. It was with very considerable difficulty that they got him back to the house and put him in the padded room. One of the attendants, Hardy, had a finger broken. However, I set it all right, and he's going on well. The two carriers were at first loud in their threats of actions for damages, and promised to rain all the penalties of the law on us. Their threats were, however, mingled with some sort of indirect apology for the defeat of the two of them by a feeble madman. They said that if it hadn't been for the way their strength had been spent in carrying and raising the heavy boxes to the cart, they would have made short work of him. They gave us another reason for their defeat, the extraordinary state of drought to which they had been reduced by the dusty nature of their occupation, and the reprehensible distance from the scene of their labours of any place of public entertainment. I quite understood their drift, and after a stiff glass of grog, or rather more of the same, and with each a sovereign in hand, they made light of the attack, and swore that they would encounter a worse madman any day for the pleasure of meeting so bloomin' good a bloke as your correspondent. I took their names and addresses, in case they might be needed. They are as follows: Jack Smollett of Duddings Rents, King George's Road, Great Walworth, and Thomas Snelling, Peter Farnley's Rogue Guide Court, Bethnal Green. They are both in the employment of Harrison Sons, Moving and Shipment Company, Orange Master's Yard, Soho. I shall report to you any matter of interest occurring here, and shall wire you at once if there's anything of importance. Believe me, dear sir, yours faithfully, Patrick Hennessy.